Welcome to The Depth Dive, where we crack open complex topics and distill the most important insights for you. Today, we're plunging into, well, a truly monumental subject, the Enlightenment. It's a period that laid so much groundwork for our modern world, but its story, often told way too simply. Our mission today is to get beyond those usual kind of neat narratives and explore what's really left of the Enlightenment's impact. We're drawing from a fantastic collection of essays, What's Left of Enlightenment, edited by two giants in the field, Keith Michael Baker and Peter Hans Rail. And this isn't just history class stuff. It's about understanding the foundational ideas that still buzz around you every single day and, frankly, whether they still hold up. You know, when we talk about the Enlightenment, most of us think of, like, a set checklist, right? Reason, progress, individual rights. It often gets presented as a single, straightforward march forward. But this deep dive, right from the start, it challenges that, argues it was far from monolithic. How does the book kind of redraw that picture?
It's a really crucial shift in perspective. What's fascinating here is how the book insists the Enlightenment wasn't, you know, a single neat program. It was more like a constellation of complex ideas, often contested, constantly evolving. The authors really push us to see its legacy as far more nuanced, fragmented, and even problematic than the usual stories suggest. That's a really vital question for you listening right now. In an era like ours, with lots of skepticism, maybe a healthy distrust of grand narratives, what bits of Enlightenment thinking are genuinely still valuable, or maybe even salvageable for us today?
Mm-hmm.
And this brings up a really important point. How do we today relate to this whole 18th century intellectual thing, especially when core ideas like universal reason or secular humanism face pretty serious challenges? You know, from so many directions, post-colonial critiques, feminism, environmentalism, questioning what progress even means.
Mm-hmm. That reframing is really powerful. And to help us untangle all this complexity, this deep dive leans heavily on that essay collection you mentioned, edited by two real heavyweights. First, there's Keith Michael Baker. He's a leading historian of the French Enlightenment. His work, like Inventing the French Revolution, is amazing at showing how these abstract philosophical ideas actually became, you know, concrete forces for change.
Right. And alongside Baker, you've got Peter Hans Rail. He's a distinguished expert, focused more on the German Enlightenment, and particularly the relationship between science, culture, and this idea of historical understanding. His work, like The German Enlightenment and the Rise of Historicism, really shines a light on how rational thought started to grapple with historical context. You know, how ideas and societies change over time, rather than just existing as these sort of timeless abstract principles.
Yeah, that interaction is key.
And their collaboration is just so powerful. You get Baker's focus on French politics and society, combined with Ryle's expertise in German intellectual history. It allows for this truly transnational view. Looking beyond just one country's experience, they've spent decades wrestling with these ideas. So they're perfect guides for us.
So it sounds like this book isn't about just, you know, picking sides, defending the Enlightenment or tearing it down. What's a core shift it offers to get us past those simple for or against arguments?
Exactly. That's not the goal here. You think about the big picture, the book is kind of like an intellectual stocktaking, like a scholarly conversation in print. It starts by acknowledging, look, the Enlightenment was never one unified thing. It was this rich, sometimes contradictory mix of ideas and cultural practices across Europe and, importantly, beyond. So the contributors dig into how different pieces from how we think about knowledge itself, what academics call epistemology, to political theories, even everyday cultural habits, how these things have been passed down, changed, fought over for centuries. It's about understanding the how and the why. Why do these ideas still spark debate or feel relevant?
And it covers huge territory, doesn't it? You mentioned the tension between universal ideals and local cultures, the clash between rational critique and tradition, how the very idea of progress evolved. It even tackles the impact of colonialism, which is often uncomfortable but essential.
Absolutely essential. It's incredibly ambitious. Mm. Draws from history, philosophy, political science, you name it. And it shows how these Enlightenment themes keep popping up in today's arguments about science, politics, culture. It really makes you see these aren't just dusty historical debates that are alive. They're in our news feeds.
Okay, with that bigger picture set, let's peel back some layers. Let's dive into some of the really fascinating, maybe even surprising insights this collection offers, starting with one from Keith Michael Baker himself. It really made me pause. He argues that one of the Enlightenment's biggest legacies wasn't just individual rights, important as they are, but something even more fundamental, the actual invention of society itself. Can you unpack that a bit?
Yeah, it sounds kind of radical, doesn't it? But think about it. Before the 18th century, how people related to each other was often seen through, religious frameworks or strict hierarchies, like under a king. Status was often seen as divinely given or inherited. But the Enlightenment started to reconceptualize human existence. Suddenly, society wasn't just God's plan or the king's domain. It became this secular thing, man-made,
right.
Something you could actually study, analyze, understand.
And crucially,
improve. That's the key. This shift is basically why we have disciplines like sociology, economics, public policy today. It laid the entire conceptual foundation for the modern social sciences. And the very idea of social reform, the belief that we can use reason to figure out how society works and then maybe make it better.
That's huge.
It is. Yeah. And it connects directly to another really critical point the book hammers home. The plurality of enlightenments, plural. We need to forget the Enlightenment as one single solid block.
Yeah.
There were distinct French, German, Scottish, American versions, probably others too. Each had its own flavor, its own priorities, its own internal debates.
Can you give an example?
Sure. So the French Enlightenment, you know, often leaned towards more radical political change, eventually leading to revolution. The Scottish Enlightenment, with figures like Adam Smith, was maybe more focused on moral philosophy, how individuals behave, and early economic ideas. And the German Enlightenment, as Rell explores, was perhaps more concerned with integrating reason with history, culture, identity.
Okay.
And understanding this plurality is so important for you, the listener. It means you don't have to buy or reject the whole package deal. You can look at specific aspects, specific traditions, evaluate them on their own terms, understand their context.
That distinction is so helpful. It allows for much more nuance, right? And it leads us straight into that tension you mentioned earlier, universalism versus particularity. So Enlightenment thinkers often claim their ideas, moral principles, political rights were universal for everyone, everywhere. But the book shows how those claims have always been challenged by different cultures, religions, philosophies, and maybe more intensely today than ever. How does this tension play out now? And what does the book suggest? Can we like hold on to some universal values but still respect deep cultural differences?
It's a million-dollar question, isn't it? And the book doesn't offer an easy answer. It suggests this tension isn't something to be solved, maybe, but something we constantly have to navigate. We see it everywhere, right? Global human rights debates versus claims of cultural sovereignty. The thing is, those Enlightenment universal claims, even if powerful in theory, were often, let's be honest, deeply rooted in European perspectives.
Which brings us to the colonial aspect.
Exactly. The colonial shadow. The book confronts this head on. How ideas like civilization or progress born from Enlightenment thinking were tragically twisted to justify empire, domination, the subjugation of non-European people. It's a dark part of the legacy. But, and this is also complex, the book explores how colonized peoples weren't just passive victims. They often took Enlightenment ideas like liberty, self-determination, rights, and turned them around. Used them as tools against colonial rule for their own liberation struggles.
Wow. So the ideas themselves could be flipped?
Precisely. It shows how ideas travel, transform, get reinterpreted. Often in ways the originators never intended. Sometimes in very contradictory ways, they can become weapons against their own source.
That's a sobering but really crucial dimension. Okay, and finally, the book takes a hard look at reason itself, capital R reason. We often imagine it as this cold, calculating, almost machine-like thing in the Enlightenment, but this deep dive says, not so fast.
Yeah, that's another common simplification it tackles. The book reveals that thinkers back then were actually fascinated by the laws of thinking. They were interested in psychology, even the physical processes of how we think, cognition. They didn't see reason as some perfect divine spark dropped into our heads. They saw it more as a human faculty, something that could be wrong, fallible, influenced by emotions, shaped by experience.
Like David Hume saying, reason is the slave of the passions.
Exactly like Hume. That's a perfect example. Reason serves our desires and feelings. It doesn't just float above them. And thinking about reason that way, as something human, messy, sometimes flawed, makes the era feel much more relatable, doesn't it? It connects to our own struggles with thinking clearly, dealing with bias, making decisions today. It's less intimidating.
Definitely. Okay, so we've unpacked a lot of complexities, some contradictions even. What does this all boil down to for you, listening? How can these insights actually apply to your world? Let's try to pull out some core messages.
Well, maybe the most important thing left from the Enlightenment, according to this deep dive, is the value of critique itself. Remember Kant's famous motto, sapere aude, dare to know. Or maybe better, dare to think for yourself. It's about this ongoing process. Constantly questioning beliefs, institutions, power structures, even questioning reason itself. It's a call for a kind of permanent critical attitude.
Which feels incredibly relevant now.
Totally. In an age drowning in information, misinformation, echo chambers, that habit of critical questioning is vital. You constantly need to be asking, wait, is this true? Says who? What's the evidence? What are the other perspectives?
And politically, the book presents a really complex picture, doesn't it? On one hand, yes, we got huge gifts like human rights, ideas about democracy, can't deny that. But essays in the book, like one by David Bell, they don't shy away from what he calls the dark side. They argue that when you reject all traditional authority, you know, break free from old ways, it can create a kind of vacuum.
Mm-hmm. A dangerous vacuum.
Yeah. And that vacuum sometimes gets filled by new abstract idols, things like the nation state or maybe revolutionary zeal itself. And that can lead to intense, even violent forms of nationalism or ideology. We've certainly seen that. It's a powerful reminder, I think, that even the best ideals, if you pursue them with this kind of blind, dogmatic fervor, can have really dangerous unintended results.
That's a crucial warning. And flowing from that, a key insight for you is about learning how to navigate that tension we discussed between the universal and the particular. The book suggests we shouldn't expect to just solve it neatly. The challenge is to learn how to manage it productively. How do we maintain critical standards? How do we commit to basic human dignity for everyone, while also staying genuinely open to different viewpoints, different ways of life, different experiences?
It's about holding both somehow.
It is. It means maybe accepting that your truth isn't the universal truth, but still holding on to core principles like justice, fairness, respect. It's a balancing act.
This deep dive definitely shows how powerful ideas can be, how they echo down the centuries. Let's touch on a few memorable lines or concepts that really capture this reexamination. Well, you have to start with Kant, right? His famous question, what is enlightenment? And his answer, enlightenment is humanity's emergence from self-incurred minority. Minority, he said, is the inability to use one's understanding without guidance from another. That just perfectly encapsulates that ideal of thinking for yourself. Intellectual autonomy, having the courage and the responsibility to figure things out.
It's so foundational. But then you have the flip side, that really chilling critique from Adorno and Horkheimer.
Yeah.
Looking back after World War II, they wrote, the fully enlightened earth radiates disaster triumphant.
Oof.
Yeah. What they were getting at was this idea of instrumental reason. When enlightenment reason gets detached from morality, from ethics, when it just becomes a tool for efficiency, for power, for control, without asking why or to what end, it can lead to absolute horrors, like the Holocaust or environmental destruction driven by pure profit motive. It's a really sobering check on the potential for our cleverness to become destructive if it's not guided by wisdom.
That's a crucial warning. And maybe a final thought that sums up this whole nuanced approach from the book.
I think this captures it well. What remains of enlightenment is not a fixed set of doctrines, but a commitment to ongoing critical reflection about the conditions of human knowledge and action. It underlines that the real value isn't a list of answers we inherited. It's the process, that dynamic, self-critical approach of questioning everything, including the questioning process itself.
Okay, so how can you, listening right now, take these pretty sophisticated historical and philosophical ideas and actually use them, apply them to your daily life, your decisions, how you engage with the world?
Well, one concrete area is the idea of the public sphere that came out of the Enlightenment. In our current media landscape, polarized social media, filter bubbles, misinformation flying everywhere, that ideal of a space where ideas are judged on their merits, where people engage in reasoned, good faith debate, not just shouting past each other, that's a really important standard to aim for, even if it feels difficult.
So how do you apply that personally?
You can try to build your own mini public sphere. Consciously seek out diverse viewpoints, credible sources. Prioritize arguments based on evidence over just emotional appeals or tribal loyalty. And try, genuinely try, to foster respectful conversation, even when you disagree strongly with someone. It's about the quality of the exchange.
And on an even more personal level, that call to dare to know.
Absolutely. That's incredibly relevant for your own intellectual growth. This deep dive really encourages you to get more sophisticated about how you form your own beliefs. It's about actively questioning your own assumptions, your own biases. We all have them. Your inherited beliefs. Ask yourself, are my opinions really based on reason and evidence that I've looked at? Or are they just based on habit, emotion, what my group thinks, what I heard somewhere? That practice of self-critique, it's a powerful tool. It helps you grow, make better decisions, maybe become a little more humble about what you know. It's like being your own internal quality control.
I like that. Your own internal quality control. Okay, as we wrap up this deep dive into the Enlightenment, it's clear we're left with this legacy that's incredibly powerful, still shaping us, but also really complex. Not simple at all.
Definitely not simple. It gave us so much, but also, as the book shows, presented us with dilemmas and challenges we're still wrestling with centuries later. The Enlightenment really championed this strong belief in progress, in humanity's power to improve things through reason, rational improvement. But considering the book's exploration of the dark sides, the unintended consequences, the ways reason itself can be misused, it leaves us with a pretty provocative question for our own time, doesn't it? In our constant push for advancement, scientific, technological, social, what aspects of our current enlightened thinking? You know, the ideas we hold most dear today, the ones we barely question, what might future generations look back on and see as our biggest blind spots, our own forms of self-incurred minority? What are we in our modern confidence failing to critically examine about ourselves right now?
That's a powerful thought to end on. What are our blind spots today? See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.